about the percolation phase transition and the...
Thank you very much. This is joint work with Christian and Jennifer, who will be speaking later today, and also with Remco van der Hofstadt from the Netherlands and Joel Spencer. And this project started rather innocently last year during a conversation at tea at Microsoft Research, and since then it's spawned a rather large manuscript that got turned into two manuscripts and now is producing a third one as well. It's about percolation on the N-cube. So the N-cube is Q sub N up here, 0, 1 to the N, and that's the vertex set of a graph whose edges, or I'll call them bonds, link vertices that differ in a single component. Okay, so we can turn this into a graph with the usual edge set on the N-cube. It's 3N because each point has N neighbors in this graph. And we want to do percolation on this bond percolation. So we'll say that bonds are independently occupied with probability P and vacant with probability 1 minus P. So P is some parameter which is fixed between 0 and 1 here. You could also think in terms of the evolution of random subgraphs of the N-cube, but I'll be adopting more the percolation point of view. And what we're interested in is we're studying the connected clusters of occupied bonds. So actually, it's really the connected clusters of occupied sites, and sites, vertices, are connected if they're joined by a path which consists of occupied bonds. And what's interesting is that there's a phase transition. There's a critical value of P, which depends on N, P, which is close to 1 over N, so that if P is less than PC, if we're in the subcritical phase, then clusters are typically of size order of n, which is logarithmic in the volume 2 to the n of the n-cube. The n-cube has 2 to the n vertices. So these are very small clusters relative to the volume. Whereas if P is bigger than this critical value, then there's a dominant component of size which is proportional to the volume. So something rather dramatic happens as you cross PC, and that's what I want to study. And actually what I'd like to do is to think about kind of zooming in on this phase transition with a magnifying glass, or maybe actually with a microscope. And first of all, you have to aim your microscope at the right place if you want to see the phase transition, so you have to know something about the location of this PC of N. And also, you want to set the resolution, so you see how much information are you going to be keeping when you look at this phase transition. So I want to be talking about these kind of things. My background is on an infinite graph, so I spend most of my time on ZD rather than on a finite set. And there the phase transition is, in a sense, cleaner because for P less, not the same function here, but this PC depends on D. And if P is less than PC, the clusters are finite, whereas if P is greater than PC, there exists a unique infinite cluster almost surely. And so the transition there is very sharp. You simply pass a single value of P and you see the transition taking place. So there are no finite size effects, but finite size effects are present on QN. There's going to be some smearing out of the phase transition. There's no jump from a finite clusters only to infinite cluster. There can't be an infinite cluster. And so things are smeared out a little bit, and we're going to need to pay some attention to that. For the complete graph, if you look at random subgraphs of the complete graph, the random graph, then what happens is that the finite size effects smear the phase transition to what's often called a window. The critical value of P on the complete graph is 1 over capital N, the number of vertices in the graph. And the correct scale to view the phase transition involves this maybe surprising factor, N to the minus 1/3, if you haven't seen it before. The methods that we bring to this problem are different than the methods which have been used previously to analyze the random graph. They're methods which come from ZD, and they've been used to study percolation for D greater than 6 and other models such as self-avoiding walk for D greater than 4 and lattice trees for D greater than 8. They're high-dimensional methods. And what we'll be doing is we'll be adapting these to the finite size system, which brings in some interesting new features that haven't been looked at before. The techniques go by the name of lace expansion. There's the triangle condition and differential inequalities. I'm not going to be saying too much about the methods in this talk, but I'll say a little bit later on about it. Also, we use a method called sprinkling, which has been used in previous work on this problem. It's more of a combinatorial type method. What is the previous work? Well, there are two papers that I'd like to refer to here. One in 1982, Itai, Komlosh, and Semeretti looked at the transition on the scale of 1 over n. That is, the critical value should be near 1 over n. And what they did was they looked at p equal to 1 plus epsilon divided by n and kept epsilon fixed. That is, it doesn't depend on n. It's some small number which doesn't depend on n. And showed that if epsilon is positive, then there exists a constant, c, which depends on epsilon, so that the largest cluster, which is largest connected cluster in the n-cube, has size which is at least a constant multiple of 2 to the n. So if you're at 1 plus epsilon over n with epsilon fixed, you're supercritical. There's a giant component which has got a size which is proportional to the volume. 10 years later, Bolabash, Kohayakawa, and Wuchak looked at the same kind of situation, the same p that we had above. I don't know why I wrote it that way. And epsilon is going to zero now. I want to think only about small epsilon, but it's going to zero as n goes to infinity. So we're trying to zoom in a little bit on the value p equals 1 over n. And what they showed is that if epsilon is... So there's a bunch of logs there, but think about 1 over the square root of n, something like that is what we're looking at here. So we're staying away from 1 over n by this much, critical side. Then the largest cluster has size which is proportional to n divided by epsilon squared. So if epsilon is not too small, well, if it's only this small, this is the smallest it can get, then you see that you're getting something which is polynomial, it's polylog in the volume. So we're definitely subcritical. Whereas epsilon is bigger than something like this, so here we're perturbing p like some logarithm divided by n squared, then the largest cluster is proportional to epsilon times the volume. So you're definitely supercritical. So the phase transition has taken place somewhere between here and here. You've gone from small clusters, the largest cluster is only this size, to a cluster which is the size of the volume. So one way of saying this is that these BKL results in this last theorem apply for the p which are outside of this interval. So they don't say anything at all about what's going on inside the interval. Outside the interval, on the left side, you know you've only got small clusters, and on the right side, you've got big clusters. Actually, they get something a little stronger than this in terms of extending the range of p, although the result itself is not an equality for the largest cluster size. They get an upper bound on the largest cluster size if p is almost 1 over n minus 1. So the upper bound is of this same form. So you see that you still are subcritical. Now, this sort of raises the question of what actually is the value of PC, or where is the phase transition really taking place? And it's tempting to think that you should look for something of the form 1 over n, or maybe 1 over n plus 1 over n squared, or perhaps a higher order polynomial in 1 over n. But we don't want to do that. And actually, our results say that you should not do that. You shouldn't try to think of it that way, that it will fail. So let's compare with ZD on the infinite lattice, where there's a non-perturbative definition of what the critical point is. You don't try to define the critical point by saying that P is equal to, 1 over D, 1 over 2D, or something like that. You define it non-perturbatively by looking at the behavior of certain functions. So there are two different definitions which agree, actually. So first definition of the critical value on ZD is that it's the largest p where the expected cluster size of a given vertex, say the origin, is finite. And what happens is that expected cluster size of a given vertex diverges as p approaches pc from the left. Another possible definition is to say it's going to be the smallest value of p, or the infimum of the values of p, where the percolation probability, that is the probability that the cluster of a given vertex, the origin, is infinite, is positive. Okay. So it's a famous result from percolation that goes back to 1986, of Menshikov and Eisenman and Barsky, that these two definitions are equivalent. I want to mention a theorem that Hara and I relevant for what comes later, and that is that if you restrict the dimension to greater than or equal to 19 for bond percolation on ZD, 19 is an artificial sort of number there that comes up in the proof, or for D greater than 6, 6 is not artificial, that's really the right value, or spread out values, and a spread out model is just a long-range percolation model. It's finite range, but long range, so that there are bonds which are joining not just nearest neighbor vertices, but vertices which are separated by a distance less than or equal to 10 or something like that, some fixed number like 10. For those spread out models, we can go right down to D greater than 6, and we proved that the divergence of this expected cluster size is linear in PC minus P as P approaches PC from the left, and the percolation probability goes to zero as P approaches PC from the right linearly. So these two numbers here, 1 and 1, are critical exponents. We heard something about critical exponents in Pasteur's talk yesterday, and our sort of intuition is that it's very useful to calculate these critical exponents if you want to understand what's going on in a phase transition. So the method which is used here is the Lace expansion, some condition results of Eisenman, Newman, Barsky, Eisenman. I'll mention a little bit more about those later on. But I just want to contrast now this definition with something that comes out of this work. So something that you can do using these methods is calculate a 1 over D expansion for PC. You can try to evaluate the critical point by perturbing around very large dimensions, infinite dimensions. And what you can show is that as D goes to infinity, PC of D is 1 over 2D plus 1 over 2D squared plus 7 halves 1 over 2D cubed plus an error term which is bounded by order 1 over D to the fourth as D goes to infinity. And the physicists have gone further than this. Gaunt and Ruskin, about 25 years ago, calculated the next two terms. The coefficients are 16 over 2D, there should be a 4 there, and 103 over 2D to the fifth, but without a proof in the sense that they just said these are the right answers and they don't bound the error term, but they're probably right. Now, the conjecture is that if you were to go to infinite order here, that the full series would diverge. Well, it's only a conjecture. I don't have any proof of that. The coefficients are certainly going in the uncomfortable direction here. 1, 1, 7 half, 16, 103. So that doesn't look so promising for convergence, although we're only looking at 5 terms. But what's maybe a little bit more convincing is that if you look at the 1 over D expansion for the critical temperature of the spherical model, which is a model which was mentioned also in Pasteur's talk yesterday, you can write down an integral formula for that critical point, and it's been proven by Gerber and Fisher, Michael Fisher, that there is a 1 over D expansion for the critical temperature to all, and that, moreover, it's divergent. So since that one diverges, maybe this one diverges too.
D and N is always the same, yes, it's just random choosing, or there is this difference in
At the moment I'm talking about ZD. So ZD, and N is for QN. So if I write D, it's for the infinite lattice.
And it's infinity.
Yeah, that's right. That's right. So PC of D is not, it's not the same function as PC of N, so the notation is confusing. So at any rate, I would not like to use this as my definition of the critical point for on the lattice. I'd rather use this one. And so what we would like to do is to find a definition on the cube which is closer to the non-perturbative definition. And we'll look to the complete graph for inspiration there, where we know that the critical value is 1 over n. The phase transition occurs at the value 1 over n. And what happens is it's known that at PC, the largest cluster has size of order n to the 2/3. So this is the complete graph on capital N points. So it's 2/3 power of the volume there. And in addition, that at PC, the expected cluster size of a given vertex in the complete graph is of order n to the 1/3. So what we'll do is we'll just use this as our definition of PC on the cube. That is, we're going to define, well, so I'll introduce this new notation. This is chi, the susceptibility. Chi is the expected cluster size of a given point in the n cube, say the origin. It's a function of p. It'll be an increasing function of p. And it's very natural then to define the critical point in view of this fact up here for the complete graph. It's natural to define the critical value as the value of p so that the expected cluster size is the cube root of the volume. That's an exact analogy with what we've got up there. So it's natural to try to do that. Of course, whether or not it works, it has to be checked, but it's natural to try it. Actually, we need a small parameter in order to use these Lace expansion methods, so we insert a fudge factor here. This little n to the minus 1/3 is just there for convenience. That's the way we're going to define the critical point at the moment. In fact, you could put different things in here, and we're working on changing that to something else. But in any event, the results that we prove show that the difference between the p defined by this equation and the p defined by this equation is smaller than any power of n. So it's something exponentially small, and we're not worried too much about such differences. So I've made a comment about that down here, that for a finite system, the definition of PC is flexible. There's no sharp phase transition. There's a little window where the transition takes place. For example, on the complete graph, you could define your critical point as 1 over n plus 1 over n squared. That would be just as good as 1 over n because of the way that the steering of the phase transition takes place. You wouldn't see that difference. So now I come to results. Write p as pc of n plus epsilon over n, where pc is defined by this equation 2 here. This is the equation. This is the definition that we're using for the critical value. And so we're perturbing that value by epsilon over n. And just a notational convenience, we'll introduce epsilon 0 of n to be the reciprocal of the critical expected cluster size of a vertex. So it's just this chi of pc of n here down. So n to the 1, very, very small. And on the side, so if you take any epsilon negative with epsilon going to 0 as n goes to infinity, then chi of p is bounded above and below by multiples of 1 over epsilon plus epsilon 0 of n. For example, if you put epsilon equals 0 in this equation, then you just get chi of p is behaving like 1 over epsilon 0 of n, but that's actually just the definition of epsilon 0 of n at the critical point. So this is consistent. This is here because it has to be there when epsilon equals 0. And from this, we can show that for any positive eta, the size of the largest cluster for such p is bounded above by this formula here. So for example, if epsilon is equal to 1 over n to the 100th power, then what you're seeing, this epsilon 0 is negligible compared to that, and you're seeing something that, which is a power of n for the largest cluster size, which is a polylog in the volume, so you're definitely subcritical in that case. So those are the subcritical results. On the supercritical side, if you take epsilon to be bigger than something rather small here, it's e to the minus n to the 1/3 power, so it's something which is smaller than any power of 1 over n, then the largest cluster size is bounded above and below by a multiple of epsilon times the volume, and the expected cluster size of a given vertex is bounded above and below by epsilon squared times the volume. So what you see here is that if you're subcritical, I'll say more about this in a minute, but if you're subcritical with epsilon equal minus 1 over n to the 100, you have something polylog in the volume for the largest cluster size. Whereas if you have epsilon positive, say 1 over n to the 100, then you have something which is proportional to the volume here with some power of n correction, which is just a polylog in the volume. So the phase transition has taken place as we go from the subcritical side to the supercritical side in this theorem.
Know something about the size of the second in the supercritical?
So we have not got any result like that. So Balabash, Kohayakawa, and Wuchak have a result in for epsilon bigger than 60 log n cubed over n, but we haven't done anything like that.
Can I ask you just to understand terminology to compare? In fact, what you call phase transition, it is not, you don't see how they come together. It's in fact threshold of things. It is just terminological, but to understand.
That's right, it's a threshold.
Threshold.
It's a threshold.
Okay.
Right.
Because it's very interesting how they come together, but it is not seen.
We're not watching the evolution here.
In the picture.
Right. Okay, so we've got this PC of n, which was defined in that non-perturbative way. What about trying to study it perturbatively? That is, can we write down an asymptotic expansion for PC of n like we had an asymptotic expansion for PC of d for ZD? So on the infinite lattice, we had a way of doing that. Does it also, can it also be carried out on this finite set? And, well, the proof is still being checked. It's a massive calculation. I'm quite confident that it's all going to work out. This is with van der Haast. And the theorem says that PC of n has an asymptotic expansion to all orders. So there are coefficients, A sub I, so that PC of n can be written in this way. And, well, we calculated the first four terms. So here they are. And they're actually exactly the same coefficients so far as what we saw for ZD and the expansion of the critical value on ZD. We think the next one will be different, but we haven't sort of expended the necessary blood, sweat, and tears to check that. The conjecture is that this diverges the same way that we think that the series diverges on ZD. One thing that you see is that because this coefficient here is bigger than 1, that PC of n is bigger than 1 over n minus 1. So we have extended the regime that was studied previously by in the BKL paper that I mentioned.
For ZD, you don't know the 16 rigorously.
That's right, but actually, we will after we finish this.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So here's a second corollary, which is more interesting than the first one, I think. Let's fix some s greater than or equal to 1, and let p be either one of these things. It doesn't matter. If we're going to look at this p, then we need to use this theorem over here. If we're going to look at the other p, then we don't need this theorem about the asymptotic expansion. But what we're doing is we're taking PC of n and perturbing it by some constant over n to the s. And here we're truncating the series at order n to the s and then perturbing on the order of the last retained term in the series. And now just plug this in. I mean, you can solve this for epsilon. Epsilon is given by the equation p equals PC of n plus epsilon over n. So you can figure out what epsilon is there. It's just delta over n to the s minus 1. And you can go and substitute that into our theorems on the subcritical and the supercritical side and see what they say about the expected cluster size of a given point or about the maximum cluster, which is in the n cube. And here's the result. So if you look at the expected cluster size of a given vertex, if delta is less than 0, then you end up with n to the s minus 1 showing up here. Whereas if delta is positive, then you end up with, well, some polynomial, which has got a negative power if s is reasonably big. But the important thing is that there's a factor of the volume here. So you see that the behavior of the expected cluster size is dramatically different if delta is negative or delta is positive. It's gone from polynomial in the logarithm of the volume to something which is very close to the volume. Similarly, for the maximum cluster size, which is found in the cube, you find that for such p, when delta is negative, so you're subcritical, the largest cluster has got this n to the 2s minus 1 behavior. Whereas if delta is positive, the largest cluster has got 2 to the n divided by n to the s minus 1. So the transition has taken place in making a change from negative delta to positive delta. And that's true no matter what s you pick. So delta less than 0 is subcritical, and delta greater than 0 is supercritical for any choice of S that you like. So
this is corollary from theorem which not yet checked.
No. This if you take this P, then it's a corollary of this theorem. If you take this P, then it's a corollary of the theorem which is checked. Yeah. Yeah. And well, frankly, I like this P better. Because this is the full critical value here, this PC event. So, right. So such P lies outside of the phase transition window. I haven't defined what the window is, but clearly we're outside it, whatever it is. On the complete graph, the window is described, as I've already mentioned, by this here. So here, n is the number of vertices in the complete graph, and 1 over n comes out in front as the critical value, and there's this scaling which is well known here. Now, it's important to realize that this n has a different interpretation than this n. This n here is actually the degree, well, n minus 1 is the degree of the complete graph, but close enough to, n is basically the degree, whereas this n is the volume. So, by analogy, on Qn, what we expect is that this 1 over n is going to be replaced by the PC of n, and that the scaling here is going to be the cube root of the volume, which is the cube root of 2 to the n, or 2 to the minus n over 3 showing up there. So we think that the window is actually exponentially small. And what we've shown is that it's smaller than every power.
Also, there's just one thing that I want to say about this, which is that people who do graph theory often say 1 over n to the 4/3.
Right.
You know, taking the 1 over n times the 1 over n to the 1/3, and it's really better to talk about the 1 over n to the 1/3 because those are two different, and the 4/3 is not the right exponent.
I don't have time in this talk to really go into the proof, but I'll just give you a shopping list of things that you need to do in order to carry out this project. So first thing is that we want to introduce an analog of the percolation probability. So on the infinite graph, that's the probability that the origin is in an infinite cluster. Well, we don't have an infinite cluster here, so we need something to replace that concept. And what we did was we defined the percolation probability to be the probability that the cluster of the origin is at least 2 to the n over 3. Alpha is some small parameter which you should just put equal to 0 there. It's only there for convenience. Actually, it may be more natural to use 2 to the 2 n over 3 here. And in fact, we're in the process of revising our choice. But it doesn't matter. At least 2 to the n over 3 works. So you can. There's some flexibility here, and we're still evaluating that. But 2 to the n over 3 works. So we're going to...
I cannot understand how there exists flexibility in theorem. In the theorem, you know this value. What is...
No, this is a definition. This is a definition.
It's used in the proof.
This is a definition.
Yeah. You define P as the same thing. Okay.
No, I don't want to be too flexible in the theorem. Right. Okay. yeah.
Terminological difference.
Right. So that's one thing. We're thinking like we're in ZD, so we need some percolation probability, and we have some flexibility as to how we define it. Then there's also a notion of magnetization, which is a standard thing which is used in percolation on ZD. It involves using some site variables as well as bond variables. So the bond variables are just, is the bond occupied or vacant? Site variables is something independent. It's you say that a vertex is green with probability 1 minus e to the minus h, and it's not green with probability e to the minus h. Or you can introduce a ghost site. There's different ways to do it. Anyway, there's something called the magnetization which comes into it. As I said, this is a shopping list that I'm putting down here. And then there are some what are by now standard methods called differential inequalities for both chi and m, which are due mainly to Eisenman and collaborators. So Eisenman and Newman and Eisenman and Barsky and Eisenman in various combinations have derived back in the mid-80s differential inequalities for chi and m as functions of p and h. So
I think maybe to protect the the intellectual property of one of my co-workers. I think the first use of differential inequalities was actually Chase and Chase and proving better.
It was before
Eisenman and Newman?
Yes.
Before Eisenman and Newman.
Yes. Yeah. Okay. So, right. Yeah. And they... The one thing that Eisenman and Newman did was they isolated a condition called the triangle condition, which I'll say something about later. And this triangle condition implied the some of the results that I mentioned earlier for ZD. So I started off by giving results on ZD that said if D is greater than or equal to 19 or greater than 6 for spread out models, that the expected cluster size diverges like 1 over PC minus P, and the percolation probability goes to 0 like PC minus P, those results follow from the triangle condition. So I'll say what the triangle condition is a little bit later, as I have time. But we have to establish the triangle condition, and this is done using a method, the Lace expansion, which has been applied to a number of dimensional models like percolation, lattice trees, lattice animals, self-avoiding walks, contact process. So the results that you get out of these two ingredients for M give you results for the percolation probability, and at this point the sprinkling is used in order to get the theorem for the maximal cluster size in the supercritical regime. And apart from the sprinkling, everything else holds rather generally. In fact, you don't notice very often in the proof that you're on the N-cube. Of course, you have to notice it at some point, because the results that we're proving wouldn't be true on an arbitrary graph. But the place where you do notice it is rather isolated, and I think it means that there is hope for extending these results to other models. So in the time that I have left, I want to say just a few words about the Lace expansion and the triangle condition. And before I do that, I have to say something about random walk on the N-cube. So we just go back to the N-cubed now and think about doing random walks, where it's just a nearest neighbor random walk. So what you do is you've got N neighbors, and with probability 1 over N, you pick one of your neighbors and you jump to it. And when you get there, well, you do it again, and you just keep on going. So the transition probability, D of X, is just, well, 1 over N, and then you check that you really are a neighbor of where you started from. So this is the Hamming norm. It's just the L1 distance on the N-cubed. And to find the two-point function for the random walk problem on the N-cube to be the sum over all nearest neighbor random walks of any length which go from 0 to x. So here, 0 and x are vertices in the N-cube. We sum over all walks of any length, and we have some parameter mu, which shows up on the left-hand side there as a parameter, to the length of the walk. So omega with absolute values is just the number of steps that the walk takes. And to keep this convergent, we should stay away from 1 over n, because this is a recurrent random walk, since the graph is finite, and so its green function will diverge at the critical point, which is what this 1 over n is. Now, this random walk obeys a random walk two-point function obeys a rather elementary convolution equation, which is written down here. This term comes from the walk which doesn't take any steps, the zero-step walk. So that'll give a contribution of 1 to here if 0 is equal to x. So there's a Kronecker delta that shows up. And then, well, the rest of the walks are going to take a first step, which is taken care of by this d, and there's a mu out there to eat up one step. And then you just carry on from that point, and so you end up with c mu. So there's a rather elementary convolution equation obeyed by the random walk two-point function. And whenever you see a convolution, it's always nice to take the Fourier transform. And I was very happy to understand that on the N-cube, the dual, the Fourier dual, is just the N-cube itself. And Fourier transforms just take this very simple form on the N-cube. So if you start with the function f on the N-cube, its Fourier transform is given by this Fourier series here. So if you apply this to this equation up here, multiply by minus 1 to the k dot x and sum over x, then you get a linear equation, actually, for the Fourier transform of the two-point function, because the convolution turns into a product. And you can solve that equation, and you end up with this simple solution here. And d hat of k is easily calculated from the formula up there, and it's given by this explicit expression. So the problem of understanding random walk on the n cube is very easy. What happens in the Lace expansion is that we take the two-point function for percolation. That's the probability that 0 is connected to x. That's the two-point function, which we would like to compare to the two-point function for the random walk problem. And what we do is we're going to think about a cluster which joins 0 and x as corresponding to a kind of a random walk path from 0 to x, but with some decorations along the random walk. And, well, in 5 minutes, I can't go into too much detail here, but the idea is that, well, this vertex has got some decoration on it here. Here there's a rather more elaborate decoration, which is actually sort of split the walk, and here there's this decoration, here there's just a single vertex, and so on. And you want to find a way to treat that percolation cluster as a random walk. Well, that takes something. That takes some input. And there is a rather delicate inclusion-exclusion argument that leads to a convolution equation for this two-point function, which replaces the convolution equation for the two-point function for the random walk. And it looks like this. So tau p of x is given by two terms which are just the same as the terms that you would get, well, that you see over here. They're just these kind of terms. But then some extra stuff that tells you that you're doing percolation and not just random walk. This pi is somehow capturing the difference between the percolation problem and the random walk problem. And it shows up in two places here. In any event, you've got a convolution equation again, so you might as well take the Fourier transform. And if you do, you end up with an expression for the Fourier transform of the two-point function that looks like this. And here you see quite clearly that pi is expressing the difference between the percolation problem and the random walk problem. Because if you put pi equals 0 here, if you just drop those two terms out, then you end up with exactly what we had over there with mu equals p. So that's the relation. Now, maybe I'll leave this up. No, I think I need the other one. You have to do some work to show that this pi is small on the n cube. And here you do have to know that you're on the n cube. Be letting n go to infinity. It's large but finite. So pi turns out to be small. And moreover, as a function of k, it doesn't vary very much. So pi of k and pi of 0 are rather close together. So if you go back to that expression that I had and take these two facts into account, pi small and pi of k close to pi of 0, then you end up with this. Now, this I've written that this is an uncontrolled approximation here. You actually have to do some work in order to make good sense out of this, but you can do that. And then what you find is that actually this right-hand side here is just the same as the right-hand side over here, except with a new value of mu. And what's happened is that the value of mu that shows up over here is actually p times 1 plus pi hat for a transform of this function pi, which I haven't really described, at 0. So here it is written that n times mu p is given by this expression. So again, pi is showing up as the difference between the random walk problem and the percolation problem. And it's kind of encapsulating everything that's important there. So what I'd like to do in this equation up here, this approximate equation, is to take p equals pc, pc of n, so the critical value which we defined as the place where the expected cluster size of a point takes on the value cube root of the volume, and put k equals 0 in this equation. Then, well, what happens is that because if you take the Fourier transform and evaluate at 0, you're just summing over x. That turns out to be the same as the expected cluster size of a point. So chi of p is equal to the Fourier transform of tau at 0. You look at this equation up there, then what you find is this in the end. So that is n times pc of n is equal to 1 minus something which is exponentially small. So this is coming out of our definition of the critical point, this point here. It's showing up from here. Divided by 1 plus pi of pc. And in particular, since this pi is small, this is basically equal to 1 minus something exponentially small. So what we're doing is we're seeing that the critical value of mu that shows up in the random walk problem here is corresponding to pc for the percolation problem is given by something which is exponentially close to 1. Now, the asymptotic expansion, the theorem that I mentioned that still, where the proof still needs to be checked, is obtained from this equation. So you have to make this precise, but that can be done. This exponentially small term plays no role, and then you see what you've got is an equation for PC, actually. Turns out that you can write down an equation for PC, but it's implicit, because PC appears also on the right-hand side. Using back, then you can solve this equation in an iterative fashion and generate as many terms as you have the patience to do. And so that's the way the asymptotic expansion can be derived. I see that my time is quickly running out here, but just say a couple more words about the triangle diagram. This will have more meaning for people who have seen this before, but the triangle diagram defines in terms of function in this way. So you have then x to y, and then y to w. If w was equal to 0, you would have a closed triangle. Otherwise, you have a triangle which has been opened up. This is a convolution, and in terms of the Fourier transform, it can be written in this way. The triangle condition, which Eisenman and Newman introduced, is that on the infinite graph, the triangle diagram is finite at the critical value of p. So if you take p equals pc, this should act finite. That has to be adapted for the n cube, because we're on a finite graph, and the triangle diagram will never blow up. The triangle condition that we're using is that at pc, as long as you stay away from w equals 0 here, that this term is little o of 1. It goes to 0 as n goes to infinity. If you just look at the k equals 0 term in here and use the approximation of the percolation two-point function by the random walk two-point function and put in the critical value, then you find that just the k equals 0 term alone here contributes something 2 to the minus n times the cube of the Fourier transform of the two-point function for random walk at k equals 0. And you see that this 2 to the n over 3, which was chosen as the place where the critical value was defined, is showing up here with a cube that has to cancel the 2 to the minus n there. And we get something small by putting in that fudge factor that I called it before. Anyway, what you see from this is that the triangle condition is really pointing also to the same value PC of n, which we used as a definition by analogy to the random graph. So just to finish up, what has been achieved here? The first conclusion is that the understanding of the phase transition on the n cube has been improved from outside of an interval of this form to outside of the interval PC of n, which we know is bigger than that, polynomial in n bigger, and something which is not quite exponentially small, but e to the minus n to the 1/3. So the area of control has been narrowed considerably here. Second conclusion is that we're using a non-perturbative definition of the critical value and getting an asymptotic expansion for it. That this PC of n is inside the window. I say we believe it. Actually, it's true that it's inside. It's got to be inside the window. I've already emphasized that previously. But we believe that the critical scaling is actually of this form. We're not able to see that far in because we have this up here rather than this. But one thing that we do know is that any polynomial in 1 over n is going to be outside of the window, unless by some miracle in that asymptotic expansion all the terms are zero after some finite number of terms. But there's no reason to expect that to be true. And finally, the Lace expansion and other methods from ZD have been adapted here for the first time to apply to finite systems. Interestingly, it's often easier to work on a finite system than on an infinite system. I guess it's not so surprising, but if you come from the infinite systems, the finite ones looked harder to me. But it turns out that a lot of these ingredients that we're using are actually easier. But there is the new phenomena, which is not present, that has to be contended with, and that is the fact that we have finite size effects, which have not been encountered previously. And that's really where some new input is required in order to adapt these methods. Thank you very much.
Any questions? I miss one point, but if I miss it, you don't think. You put this pi p as additional factor between the collation and I miss if it was defined. You just
no, I. Yeah, right. Yeah.
Okay.
That's another talk.
Another question? If not, then we have a 6 minutes break.
Okay.